Contra Radio Network presents The Growing Homestead with your host, Rob Alberucci.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Growing Homestead. I am your host, Rob Alderucci. Tonight, we're joined by a leader in the homesteading and gardening tool industry. Welcome, Haas Tools.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great opportunity to be here. Kind of our passion in life is helping people grow their own food and being successful at it. So about 10 years ago, we was looking around at the garden tool market, and everything was made in China. Nothing had any support, and everything was kind of cheaply made, we felt. And we wanted to make some products to help people be successful. But not only that, to make tools that would last for generations that you could, pass down to your children and your grandchildren, just like some of the old tools of yesterday. And the one that comes to mind is the Planet Junior, which was made for probably 100 years. And there's certain parts of the country, there's several of them being used. And these tools are over 100 years old. And that's kind of what we wanted to do, is provide a tool that would be around for generations to help people grow their own food and be successful at it.
I work in the construction industry. I have an electrical background, and I use tools every single day, all day long, at work and at home. And I appreciate a well-made tool. My always motto is, for tools, when you buy cheap, you're going to buy twice.
Yeah, we've gotten into a society that has been in the throwaway. You know, when something tears up, you just throw it away and go get you another one. And I like to have something that I can actually repair if it needs to be repaired and just keep using the same tool. And when you do buy that tool, you feel like you're making an investment, but it's a tool that's going to last you the rest of your life that you never have to replace.
So these tools here are made local, right?
Yeah, all of our tools are made in all of our tools and all of our parts are made in the USA. Except for nuts and bolts. You can hardly get nuts and bolts that's made in the USA anymore. So the only thing that we have to bring in is nuts and bolts. All our other parts and components are made in the USA.
And then where are you guys out of?
We're out of South Georgia. We're about an hour above the Florida line, so we're in the South Georgia, or as we call it, the Flatwoods of Georgia. It's just as flat as it could be down here. And stays warm most of the time, 80-something degrees out there today. We're in, I believe, 8B on the USDA hardness zone, so we're pretty far south.
Right. I'm up here in southeast Indiana, and we're in zone 6 is where I'm at. So I would love to have your 80-degree weather right now. We were still having snow on the ground as of about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we got corn already up, and it's nice living down here, but I tell you, we got bugs y'all have never seen before, so they is some trade-offs to it.
Sure. So I know that the Haas name is the leader when it comes to the wheel hoe. How did that come about, and is that kind of your staple product?
Oh, absolutely it is. What we did is we went back and looked at some of the tools that were made earlier in the 19th century that was standouts, the ones that really made a difference and that held the test of time. And one of them we found was the Planet Junior wheel hoe. So we actually bought some off of eBay. We re-engineered them. That means we pretty much copied them. But we did make a few improvements to them where we seen improvements could be made, and we brought those back. And it was important to us, as we made all these tools and these parts, to have replacement parts for the old Planet Junior. So if somebody does have an old Planet Junior, our handles will fit the old Planet Juniors, and all of our implements will fit the old Planet Junior. So if somebody has one of those old tools, they can buy a new tool, new components from us that will actually work off their old tools. So that's what we did. We looked back and seen what was successful and what was good back in the day, and we tried to make that a little bit better and bring it back to the market.
That's excellent. I talk on my show a lot of times. I'm a big fan of growing your own food, small scale farming. I'm on 7 acres here. We've got some livestock here, and part of being the self-sustaining is also being able to grow feed for your livestock. And for the small scale guy to grow small grains and just a small garden for himself, the market is very limited on what's available. If you're not farming 50, 100, 500 acres, it's tough. So to find you guys and to find what you offer, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, what happened was around the 1980s, during that period right there, everybody got away from gardening. Gardening went by the wayside, and the trend just went down to nothing. And then you started back up around 2000, people started realizing they need to get back to growing their own food, and they need to learn that skill set again to be able to teach it to their children, and the importance of being able to grow your own food for health benefits and for food safety. And that trend started ticking up. And I actually think around 2008, it may have limited out, and we've trickled down just a little bit from then, but we still have a big trend out there of people wanting to grow their own food. And you know what? There's several reasons for that.
Hello, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I think one of the big reasons, like you said, and it's funny you mentioned back in 2008 with the big housing crash. So that affected people several ways. One, unfortunately, everybody's pocketbook got tight, so I could understand where your sales dropped a little bit. But then also at the same time, due to everybody's pocketbook getting tight, the importance of growing your own food and finding that independence really came to the forefront.
Yeah, people realized that, first of all, they didn't have money to travel, so they wanted to find things that they could do around home as a hobby that didn't cost them any money, that might even save them some money. From an economic standpoint, gardening is a great hobby to have because you get payback from that, unlike golf or some other hobby. So gardening gives you the payback for your work, and also you get to instill a work ethic into your kids, teaching them how to work, and you get to pass a trait on to them where they can be self-sustainable and have things that they can pass on to their generation. So it's really important. Also, from a food safety standpoint, it's been a long time since we've had one of those food safety scares, but I just noticed on the news the other day they had some kind of disease in romaine lettuce that come out of, the Midwest somewhere. So from a food safety standpoint, when you grow your own food, you know what you're eating, and you're not putting yourself out there to getting some type of food poison and, causing some major problems.
Well, that, and you see this organic food stuff has really become popular. But then when you really start digging into the so-called organic labels, there's so much fine print when it comes to this, like chickens, like free range and cage free and what actually is organic? So, I mean, you really, until you start to really, really dig into it, or you know your food source, you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah, the term organic back 20 years ago, it pretty much was a term that meant all natural. Well, the government got a hold to it a few years ago. And when they got a hold to it, then they started defining what organic was. And now you have a list of products that the government puts out that you can use in organic production or that may be prohibited using from organic production. Just to give you an example, we always think that organic means all natural, but it doesn't. Clorox is approved to be using in organic production as a disinfectant. And we all know Clorox is not a natural product. And there are some other products out there that are natural products that are prohibited. So just because it says organic on there doesn't always mean that it's all natural, because the government sets the standards for that nowadays. What I try to tell people to do is when you grow your garden, you need to be focused on growing natural, good food. And you may want to use some what we call conventional products in there, but you need to understand what you're using, and you need to make sure that you're not putting nothing on there that compromises the health of your family. One of the biggest problems with conventional production of vegetable nowadays is a class of chemistry called the neonicotinoids. This class of chemistry, they put on our produce, our tomatoes and our peppers and everything, and they put it in systemic-wise in the irrigation water, and it's taking it through that plant, and that chemical is distributed all in that plant and even in that fruit. So when you go buy those vegetables from the supermarket and you carry them home and you think you did a good thing by washing them, cleaning all the pesticides off, you're not doing anything because these neonicotinoids are actually inside that fruit. So that's one of the main scary things to me about buying fruit and vegetables from the supermarket. And, you know, when I grow my own food, I know this chemical, these compounds were not put on it, and I feel a lot better about feeding it to my children or my grandchildren.
So you've got these products. You live by what you sell. You preach what you know, and it's easy to tell that you have immersed yourself into this, and this is a passion for you.
Well, absolutely. It's a passion for me and everybody who works in the company to try to educate people, give them the supplies and the tools to be successful. The key word there is being successful at growing your own food, because there's nothing more frustrating than getting out there and working real hard and failing. So we're trying to help people be successful and to be happy about what they do and be fruitful with, you know, the produce that they have coming off in the garden to be proud of.
So we have a lot of our listeners are from the down south, and you mentioned that you like to educate. I noticed that you guys have the property. Is it there at your factory where you do the test garden and stuff in the resource center?
We do. We have a test garden right outside of our warehouse right here that we shoot our videos in. We do a lot of trialing out there. We trial different varieties. We trial different tools and supplies out there. And, you know, when we find out they've worked good and they're going to be a benefit to our customers, then we, you know, bring them to market. But we use that trial garden for all those things, and also, you know, we all love to eat out of it too.
That's excellent. So going into your product line, you guys have the single wheel hoe and then the double wheel hoe. What would be the benefits for each of them?
Well, I tell people, if you're just starting out and you got a small garden, I say a small garden, like a 20 by 50 or something like that, you got a small area in your backyard that you're just starting, get the single wheel hoe. It's a nice entry level tool. You can take it and you get started, and you can add tools to it or attachments to it as you need to. And if you get up to, you know, your garden's getting bigger and better every year, then you can upgrade from there. Now, market farmers or people that's got a larger garden would probably be better off to go with a double wheel hoe, because it's a little bit more stable and it has a few more things that you can do with it than you can the single wheel hoe. You can actually straddle a row. You can save a little time by using the double wheel hoe over the single wheel hoe. But the great thing is, if you buy a single wheel hoe and 4 or 5 years down the line you wish you'd got the double wheel hoe, we sell a conversion kit so you can just switch it right over.
Because there isn't anything better than having to set one tool aside to replace it with another.
That's exactly right. So we try to bake things so that it's kind of like, think about it like a tractor. You know, you buy your tractor and you can always add implements to it. That's the way we try to do the wheel hoe. You know, once you buy your wheel hoe, you never have to buy another wheel hoe. And you can actually buy whatever implement you may need to be successful. You may not need them all, but there may be some, or we may come out with some new ones, but you can just buy that attachment to go to that wheel hoe that you've already got.
And now, it's funny with me, I'm going to tell a little story here on how I found you guys. I go through hard rakes, the hard garden rakes, about one every year, and I could not find anybody that could manufacture a hard rake that would last more than 1 year. And therefore, my search on the internet is what brought me to you guys, and that hard rake that I got from you guys, I've had it for probably going on to five to 6 years now. And it just thrilled me to death. And then it just went on from there.
Yeah, we don't sell tools that you can go down to your big box store and buy, or you can go to Walmart and buy. We sell tools that's a better grade than that. And we have to, because our customers expect that out of us. So what we do is we search out those tools that are made in the USA and that are better quality. So, because our customers demand a better quality, they're willing to pay a little bit more, but they want that better quality, and they demand that out of us, and we respect that.
And then for the person that's just getting started out, when you start looking at all the attachments, everything can kind of get a little bit overwhelming. But I see you guys offer a bunch of the package deals.
We do, and the package deals make it easy for somebody to try to figure out what they need to start. So you know, we take a group of tools that we think is adequate for somebody starting that, and we put it together as a package. So when we call in, we can go over those packages with them. We ask them a few questions about what they grow, how big is the garden, everything, and we try to match them to one of these packages, and that makes it easy on everybody.
That's excellent. Now, the other thing that really has me interested is your cedar.
Yeah, the cedar works great, especially on those small seeds. It's nearly impossible to plant by hand. Mustard, turnip greens, microgreens, even your lettuces that are pelletized, your beet seeds that are pelletized, any of those small seeds that are really hard to plant, cedar does a wonderful job of planting those, and you know, it puts them out there in a spacing that they can grow well. If you plant those by hand, a lot of times they get way too crowded and you spend a lot of your time thinning them out. Then you have a real, you know, you have an inadequate plant because it's planted too close and it's competition with all the others. So if you plant them out there in spacing that they need to be, they grow off a lot better. And that's where the cedar comes in handy.
Well, and as I mentioned before, we're getting into starting to grow a lot of our own animal feed. And we've been growing about 3/4 acre of a non-GMO field corn. So that cedar just being able to run down the line really saves a lot of time versus planting by hand.
Yeah, you know, we started probably about 4 or 5 years ago experimenting with some different field corns, and I tell you, that's become a passion of mine lately. I love growing these old heirloom varieties of corn, and the taste of those, we're making cornmeal and grits out of them. We even eat them fresh as what we call roasting here in the South. But the taste and the quality of this old heirloom corns compared to the new hybrids today, they is a world of difference. And it's been an eye-opening experience for me growing these heirlooms, and it's been wonderful. And we're still experimenting with new varieties. A couple of the ones I've grown that I really like is the Hickory King and the Bloody Butcher, which is a red one. We've grown some of the Trucker's Favorite, but we're growing a new one this year called Jimmy Red, which is a red corn. And I'm interested to see how it's going to do.
And then I've seen where you guys actually sell that seed on your website.
Yeah, we do. We kind of happened accidentally, but we did a video showing that. We had a lot of people, you know, contact us, wanting to know where they could buy that. And we started selling. The first time I made grits out of that Bloody Butcher corn, I told my wife, I said, we're going to be millionaires. I said, this stuff here, I said, that ain't, this is amazing. And, you know, it's a red grit anyway, but it's got such a hearty taste, and it's so different than the store-bought grits that you make. I think everybody should experience that. If you do, you would definitely be enjoying growing your own corn and grinding your own corn because it makes a world of difference in the taste of it.
That's excellent. Now, you guys make a lot of videos. You guys have a very large presence on YouTube. There is another show that I tend to follow on YouTube that likes to showcase a lot of your products. And I got to ask you about Tractor Time with Tim. Have you ever spoke to them or met with them?
No, actually, my son, Travis, is the marketing director, and we call these type people influencers. And Travis has most of most of the interactions with those. So personally, I have not, but I'm almost positive Travis has spoke with him because I hear him talking about him quite a bit. And I've watched a few of his videos as well, and they are good.
Yeah, I like them a lot. The father daughter team and the wife in there, they're entertaining to watch. I enjoy their show.
Yep.
How about the upcoming future? Where do you see it going?
Well, that's interesting. You know, the gardening industry is tied to the economy and it's tied to food safety scares. So it's according to what the economy does, and it's according, you know, if we have any food safety scares or anything like that come up of what the actual industry would do. We're planning on staying right where we're at, bringing out new tools, bringing out new supplies that's going to help people grow their own food. And we're not going to try to get caught up in all the everyday, you know, the way the economy is. And we're going to just kind of ride it out, continue to give people good information on how to grow their own food and think of that. What we do see is a big increased attention or awareness in the millennials of wanting to grow their own food. And those people have to be educated because a lot of the skill set of gardening has been lost through the generations. So they don't know anything, or their parents, you know, weren't able to teach them. So that's what we find with our YouTube channel. A lot of the millennials are watching that, trying to get information and learning how to garden because they're interested in growing their own food.
You had said that a passion of yours has become the corn. One that I'm starting to get into a lot of time, and I can't find much of any support in it, is the small scale grains. Any ideas, or you got, or has that caught your guys' attention on for the small guy to be able to harvest the small scale grains? Your whether it be the Milo or the oats or the wheat.
Yeah, absolutely. There's movement within that, and we've seen it too, and we've done a little bit of research on there. You know, the funny thing, over in India and overseas in these third world countries, they have some equipment over there that actually works for small-scale farmer. And I think it probably would be beneficial for all of us to look at, to look some of the tooling that they've got that's worked well for them and see if we can't bring that over here and use that technology in the USA, because there is nothing out there for the small-scale grain farmer in the USA right now.
No, that is a very tough market. And I've got to the point to where I'm starting to grow a lot of my small scale grains and that kind of stuff right in the pasture with my animals, taking in a solar fence charger, charging it off or roping it off, letting the grains grow. And then I'm almost reduced to having the animals self harvest because there's just nothing that I can do for it.
Right. You know, a lot of those grains you're speaking of, there's just like corn. They have a lot of unique tastes and a lot of nutrients that these new hybrid varieties don't have. And I think we'd be well served to bring some of those back.
Sure. The other big part of our listening audience is the preppers. So we look for the heirloom seeds and all that stuff that we can save year from year after year. To where we're, because we recognize the times, maybe, who's to say, but there could possibly be a time where these big box stores are not around, and we're going to have to be able to save our stuff from year after year.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we find ourselves even saving seed. We do it because we want to save those varieties. We're scared they're going to get lost, but yeah, we really need to be concerned about our seed supply, especially with the GMO movement out there. We need to be concerned about a pure seed supply and having it on hand so we can use it, because, you know, these GMO seeds, they belong to the, even after you grow them, they still belong to the company, you know, to the big corporations. Legally, you can't use those again. So that's a little bit scary to me.
Yeah, I have seen several news stories of farmers being sued for millions of dollars by these big seed company corporations, where they've tried to save their seed or something like that. And it just boggles my mind that you can grow something out there and it's not really yours.
Yeah, absolutely. That even happened close by to where I live. And I tell you another thing that's really concerning to me. If my neighbor wants to grow GMO corn, then, you know, I feel like that should be his business. But what really bothers me, if I want to grow a pure GMO corn, I'm going to give a pure heirloom corn across the street on my property, I think I have that right that GMO should not contaminate my heirloom strain. So that is another point that we as a country should really look at. A lot of these heirlooms are getting contaminated by these GMO strains, and we don't have a pure seed anymore. And, you know, a lot of that has been overlooked.
Sure. I could see where that happens on my small property. I'm surrounded by large bean fields and corn fields, and the threat of cross-pollination, I can definitely see where that's an issue. Or these big corporations with that use this Roundup Ready corn, you always have some drift. There's nothing out there that can you can spray that Roundup or that glyphosate and have it stay exactly put.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people around here used to use, they're not as much now, used to use airplanes, and I was always amazed at the amount of drift we could get off those airplanes. And it was always a given, you know, you got a little bit. But, you know, if you really think about it, that's intrusive upon your homestead when somebody, your neighbor, sprays something and you get that pesticide drift left on your homestead, that, you know, you ought to be supportive and you ought to have some rights there of being able to keep that off from your property.
Mm-hmm. That's always, I follow a lot of these homesteading groups, and it seems like every year that's definitely a big topic that causes a lot of uproar, is people having their raspberry bushes or something like that that they grow on fence lines. There seems to be that fight every year.
Right, absolutely. Well, you was mentioning the preppers a while ago. We deal with a lot of preppers, and one thing that I give some talks around the country at the Mother Earth News Fairs, and one of the things I talk about is growing foods that store well. So if you did have an incident where you was out of power for, you know, a month or 6 weeks, which is, we think is unheard of, but it's really not, you need foods on hand that store well. And some of the foods that we grow on our homestead, we have learned to grow things that do store well without refrigeration. And that is onions. We grow a lot of onions. We grow a lot of potatoes. We grow a lot of sweet potatoes. We grow a lot of pumpkins. And we grow some winter squash. And all of those store without electricity, which is really good to have a food source that you can put in the barn and not have to refrigerate, and you can have a food source for up to 6 months. Some of these squash, using winter squash, will last up to 6 months and are a great source of protein and very healthy for you. So I think on a homestead, you definitely need to have a plan to grow some of the foods that do not take processing and that does not take, you know, electricity to store.
That is, I want to ask you about these sweet potatoes. I have not grown them. I do have them on my list for this year, but from what I understand is you're able to eat the leaf as well as the potato itself. Is that true?
That is, and I've not done that, but I'm going to do it this year. In one of our test gardens, we had an Asian lady come through, and she talked to me about this for quite a while. This is an Asian thing, evidently, but she explained to me how they stir fry the leaves, and I'm definitely going to give that a try this year. She gave it rave reviews about how well they were to eat.
And now for everybody that's listening, I want to clarify that it is just the sweet potato leaves. It is not your normal potato leaves. So make sure you all keep that straight. What kind of stuff are you into on your homestead there?
Well, we've got horses, of course, and we've had goats. I raised my kids on goat milk, so we don't have any at the time, but we've had milk goats for years. We've got donkeys. We've got chickens. I think chickens is probably the premier animal anybody ought to have on the homestead because they give so much back. And we've had chickens ever since I've been grown. So we have chickens. We have horses. We have draft horses on the homestead right now. Of course, we always keep a dog or two around.
I'm jealous of your donkeys. I've been wanting a donkey forever. But as of right now, we've got the dairy goats, we have chickens, turkeys, and then we've just gotten into the pigs.
The pigs are on my list to do next.
I think probably my favorite animal out here are the turkeys. I keep them locked up in a fenced-in area until the hens go to nest. And then once the hens are on nest, then I let my toms out to free range. And just sitting out there on the porch watching these toms walking around, strutting like they're on a turntable, just cracks me up.
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of wild turkeys around here, and if I see them in the field, I pull over on the side of the road and just watch them for a while because they are very beautiful, especially when they're fanning out and they're in their breeding season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're excellent. Well, I can't tell you how excited I am to have you call into this show, and just the wealth of knowledge is just amazing, and I'm so thrilled to have you on the show tonight.
Well, absolutely. It was a great opportunity for us to be a part of it, and like you mentioned earlier, we got a lot of YouTube videos out there on our YouTube channel, which is called Hoss Garden Tools, and, you know, anybody that's interested in growing their own food should take a look at it, and if you ever got any questions, anything, the one thing about us, when you call here, somebody answers the phone. So, and you can talk to me or anybody else here in the office. You know, we're all pretty knowledgeable about what we got and what we do. So if you ever have any questions or comments, you know, we're just a phone call away.
Yeah, and I was amazed that when I sent you guys the email asking to be on the show, I got a response probably back in less than a half hour, and I was just thoroughly impressed. So you have any final thoughts or words of wisdom for us?
Well, you know, anybody that's starting to grow their own food, this is what I always tell them. I say start out small and then gradually work your way up, because this is gardening. It's a skill set. It's something that you learn. So the worst thing you can do is go out there and start big and fail, and you get really disappointed and you give up altogether. So start small, gradually learn skill set, and make your garden bigger and bigger and get better at it every year and make it enjoyable. And that way you'll enjoy exactly what you're doing, and it'll be real rewarding for you and your family.
That's excellent. So there, once again, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. And everybody has learned a lot, and hopefully in the future we'll have you guys back. And should you guys have a new product that you want to showcase or something like that, please get in touch with me and we'll hit you back on.
Absolutely, Rob. We appreciate it.
I thank you.
Mm-hmm.